You've tuned in to the WGXC Morning Show. I'm Tom Rowe, live in Acre this morning, and we have lots in store for you. We're going to hear from Assemblymember Bill Colton, who has backed or is the lead sponsor of the New York State Off Fossil Fuels Act, which calls for 100% renewable energy by 2030 in New York State and an immediate halt to new fossil fuels infrastructure. He spoke with Mark Dunley from WOOC, WGXC's partner station in Troy. We're also going to hear the weekly congressional report for New York's 19th District with the farewell speech from Representative John Faso on the House floor. Also, Rob Gellis runs down historic December events, and Phyllis Segura talks with Paul Sturmer, director of the Food Bank of the Hudson Valley, and Holly Shelowitz of Nourishing Wisdom, a nutrition and wellness counselor and chef. All this local news, weather, more, what's events going on around the area this weekend, all this and more on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is Rodney Greenblatt from Catskill, and you're listening to WGXC Acre 90.7 FM.
Creating opportunities, fighting poverty, changing lives. For almost 50 years, Community Action of Greene County has proudly served our community, providing education, tools, and advocacy for those in need. Services range from emergency services, food pantry, housing and homelessness assistance, and weatherization in Greene County, to domestic violence and Wheels for Work programs in both Greene and Columbia counties. Our Pay It Forward community thrift store generates income to support our programs. For more information, to donate, to volunteer, or if you are in need of services, please visit us at www.cagcny.org or dial 943-9205.
Turn out, tune in, and ring in the new year with WGXC live at the Half Moon in Hudson. Come out for the annual fun at one of the busiest New Year's celebrations in the area. This year, things get started at 8 p.m. with karaoke hosted by Amanda Lees, followed by dancing to the music of the band Blueberry. And then, after midnight, DJ Vaugh from WGXC's Friday Night Vibe session keeps the airwaves and the dance floor moving. The sliding scale contribution at the door helps keep WGXC on 90.7 FM in the new year. The Taste of India food truck will also be there, with a portion of their food sales going to benefit WGXC. And the entire event will be broadcast live on 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at WGXC.org/donate. And do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org/donate now.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
And I'm Tom Rowe in the WGXC newsroom. You can go to the newsroom at wgxc.org to find out more information about anything you hear here. H. Rose Schneider reports in the Altamont Enterprise that after a routine audit showed missing funds in Rensselaerville's town coffers, police were notified and Stephen Fledging resigned as supervisor. Trooper Kara M. Burns, the public information officer for Troop G of the state police, confirmed December 13th that police are investigating possible fraud involving Fledging in the southern Albany County town. A special December 12th town board meeting passed resolutions removing Fledging from the town's bank accounts and credit cards and allowing notification of the town's insurance company. Deputy Supervisor John Dulce also now has access to public records. Fledging is a Democrat elected last year against David Bowdish, who was put on the Republican ballot against his will and said he would refuse the job if elected. Fledging would not comment for the article. Dulce spoke at the regular December 13th town board meeting about the issue.
Informed by the outside auditors, Patterson, Koski, Howell, Mucci, that they had uncovered in the course of an audit multiple checks that had been written to the town's payroll account to Steve Fledging without town authorization. In discussions with me, the auditors, the town board, Mr. Fledging acknowledged that this had taken place. This is uncomfortable for all of us, for the citizens, that we've been disappointed with our supervisor, but we need to move forward.
You can read that full story in the Altamont Enterprise. Amanda Purcell reports for Columbia Green Media that the kerfuffle about the vigilante street painters continues in Hudson. Four Hudson residents were charged October 18th with making graffiti, a Class A misdemeanor, and with other violations of the city code. They painted a crosswalk on a street because the city's Department of Public Works had not yet painted a crosswalk there, and they deemed the intersection dangerous. This week, the Columbia County District Attorney's Office proposed to dismiss the case in exchange for a sentence of community service with the Department of Public Works. Quote, mandating it to be only with the DPW in this case can only be interpreted as punishment or retribution by the DPW, unquote, defense attorney Susan Tipograph said December 12th. Tipograph represents Fourth Ward Supervisor and Time and Space Limited co-founder Linda Mussman and Time and Space Limited co-founder Claudia Bruce, two of the four crosswalk vigilantes. Earlier, she said, quote, it seems like how this case is being dealt with seems different than what the general practice is in Hudson City Court, unquote. That made Rob Perry, the head of Hudson's Department of Public Works, angry. Quote, I doubt Attorney Tipograph's statement, as quoted in the Register-Star, really, quote, seems like retribution, unquote, Perry said. Quote, they had no problem playing the DPW worker in the first place. Now they are opposed to actual DPW work, unquote. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Eric Anderson reports for the Albany Times-Union that Allegiant Air's first flight landed at Albany International Airport December 10th. The low-fare carrier began year-round nonstop flights to Fort Myers, Orlando, and Tampa this week. Albany's airport has recently added flights from Frontier, Elite Airways, and OneJet in recent months. In November, the Airport Authority Board approved contracts for the design of a new 1,000-vehicle parking garage and the sale of airport revenue bonds for up to $25 million to help pay for the project. The new garage is scheduled to open in March 2020. Read the full story in the Albany Times-Union. Kenneth Lovett reports in the New York Daily News that New York's Attorney General Barbara Underwood filed a lawsuit December 13th in Albany State Supreme Court against Walmart, Target, and toy importer LaRose Industries, saying they sold an item for children that contained dangerous amounts of lead. Testing showed that Crazy Jewels jewelry-making kits that contained parts with lead levels up to 10 times higher than federal law allows for children's products. The two stores sold the products in 2015 and 2016. While the importing company quickly changed its business practices once the investigation began, Target and Walmart have so far refused, quote, to take affirmative measures sufficient to ensure that they do not again import, distribute, and sell other toys that place New York children at risk of adverse health consequences from lead exposure, unquote, the lawsuit says. Walmart and Target both had a representative make a very vague statement to the newspaper about how the companies both have a commitment to safety. Read the full story in the New York Daily News.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts Friday there's a chance of rain during the day, a 20% chance. Otherwise, it should be mostly cloudy with a high near 42 and a low around 38. Saturday, again, rain is in the forecast, 30% chance. Mostly cloudy skies and a high near 46. Saturday night, the rain could turn to snow, but it should be light. Mostly cloudy skies and a low around 29. Sunday, there's a chance of snow in the early morning, then turning to rain. Mostly cloudy skies, a high near 36 and a low around 29. Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported, creative radio for open ears. Tune in Friday, December 14th to special radio on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. At 9 a.m. on the WGXC Morning Show, Assemblymember Bill Colton, the lead sponsor of the New York State Off Fossil Fuels Act, which calls for 100% renewable energy by 2030 in the state, will be interviewed by Mark Dunley from WOOC, our partner station in Troy. Also hear the weekly congressional report for New York's 19th District with the farewell speech from Representative John Faso from the House floor. And Rob Gellis runs down the historic December events, and Phyllis Segura talks with Paul Sturmer, the director of the Food Bank of the Hudson Valley, and Holly Shelowitz of Nourishing Wisdom, a nutrition and wellness counselor and chef. At 11 a.m., Frederick Arnold is in with the City Folk Show from Hudson's First Presbyterian Church. And then after the noon news, it's time for the Sugar Shack Jukebox. Rockin' Ray Palmer and his annual Christmas show is in at 12:05 today. Then stay tuned at 8 p.m. There's another holiday special with the Little Magician annual holiday show at 8 p.m. We've also got an extra web stream from Hilo and Catskill with Lord Youth and Nick Pankin performing along Main Street in Catskill, and on the radio at 90.7 FM.
Hello, this is Rob Gellis with the December edition of This Month in History, a chronicle of significant or infamous events in art, science, music, literature, sports, and more that occurred this month either in the near or distant past. On December 14th, 1911, the Norwegian explorer Roald Amundsen became the first president to stand at the South Pole. Amundsen's exploration party reached the South Pole ahead of the English explorer Sir Robert Scott, who wanted to claim the pole for the British Empire. On December 20th, 1860, South Carolina seceded from the Union. By June 1861, 10 more southern states had seceded, forming the Confederacy, sparking the American Civil War. It was the bloodiest war fought by American soldiers. On December 25th, 1776, George Washington crossed the Delaware River with his army to surprise the German Hessians at Trenton, New Jersey. The Hessians surrendered with nearly 1,000 taken prisoner. The victory provided a much-needed boost to the cause of American independence. On December 31st, 1879, Thomas Edison gave the first public demonstration of his electric light at his laboratory in Menlo Park, New Jersey. Edison developed a long-lasting electric bulb and also an electric lighting system. You have been listening to This Month in History, a monthly broadcast of historic events on WGXC 90.7 FM. If you have an event that you would like to hear included in This Month in History, email me, Rob Gellis, at info@wgxc.org.
I'm Tom Rowe with WGXC, and you're listening to the Congressional Report for New York's 19th District. For news about Representative John Faso, current Republican from Kinderhook who holds the position, and Antonio Delgado, the congressperson-elect. The website 538.com currently reports that Representative John Faso votes with Donald Trump's positions 89.4% of the time, up slightly from last week.
The Daily Freeman is reporting U.S. Representative-elect Antonio Delgado announced December 10th the appointment of Athens resident Amanda Brumhauer as his district director. Broomhauer will oversee all district offices and constituent services, including representing Delgado at local meetings and events. She will bring approximately 10 years of public service experience to her new role. Broomhauer most recently worked as a special assistant in the New York State Office of General Services. She previously worked as a federal liaison for former U.S. Representative Maurice Hinchey, handling constituent inquiries concerning the U.S. Departments of State, Homeland Security, Defense, Veterans Affairs, and Education. Broomhauer has also worked as Deputy District Director for former U.S. Representative Scott Murphy, a position that included managing his regional office in Hudson. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman. Alex Koch reports in Sludge that a businessman and Republican megadonor bankrolled an obscure Texas-based super PAC that usually backs Republicans, spent $100,000 to help a Green Party candidate in the November congressional election. Estee Lauder heir Robert Lauder donated $100,000 to conservative super PAC Fight for Tomorrow on October 18th, the first day super PAC donors could donate money without having their identities revealed until after the election. Fight for Tomorrow then spent nearly all of that money on digital ads, mailers, and phone calls supporting Steve Greenfield, a Green Party candidate. Greenfield was a little-known candidate against the winner, Democrat Antonio Delgado, and incumbent Republican John Faso. Koch writes, and I quote, "The only explanation is the last-minute ads were an unsuccessful attempt to peel away enough Democratic votes from Delgado in order to put Faso in the win column once again. Greenfield has called the Fight for Tomorrow spending, and I quote, a dirty trick, end quote, and says that all PACs, and I quote, must be legislated out of existence immediately. All over the country, a handful of billionaires donate by tens of millions every year, not merely to support the candidate of their own preference, but to distort the campaigns of others who are powerless to compete with the reach their money can buy. I spent $3,000 on my campaign. It took me 6 months to raise and spend that money, and it was only 1/33rd of what Lauder spent in a single day to completely misrepresent me to a much wider audience, and one I had no interest in targeting." And you can read that full story in Sludge. William J. Kimball is reporting for the Daily Freeman. U.S. Representative John Faso said December 11th that while the payment of hush money to two women who claimed to have had affairs with Donald Trump was, and I quote, reprehensible, end quote, he does not believe the president broke campaign finance laws in the process. The Kinderhook Republican said information about the payments from federal prosecutors in the case against former Trump attorney Michael Cohen do not rise to the level of impeachment. Faso said, and I quote, "It's highly speculative as to whether those payments, reprehensible as the entire matter was, I think it's a stretch to say that it violated federal campaign finance rules," end quote. Prosecutors said Cohen admitted acting, and I quote, "in coordination with and at the direction," end quote, of then-candidate Trump when the payments were made in the summer and fall of 2016, and that the payments were meant to influence the presidential election. Faso, who lost his re-election bid in November to Democrat Antonio Delgado of Rhinebeck, is not convinced that Special Prosecutor Counsel Robert Mueller has successfully drawn a direct correlation between the Trump campaign and Russian government officials. Faso has asked for the Mueller investigation to be concluded quickly, but the congressman acknowledged this week that there are many questions about the matter still unanswered. Delgado could not be reached for comment. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman.
John Faso had a few last votes in Congress this week before the one-term congressperson heads back to Kinderhook. Faso voted for the Farm Bill, which passed with 182 Republican votes and 187 Democratic votes. He also voted for something tacked onto one Farm Bill vote to block a vote on whether the United States should be involved in the war in Yemen. The rest of Faso's votes this week were largely ceremonial and or bipartisan.
Richard Moody reports for Columbia Green Media that John Faso, the local congressperson who did away with town hall meetings on notifying constituents of public appearances, called for civility in his farewell speech in Washington, D.C., December 12th. Faso said on the House floor, and I quote, We all need to renew our efforts to conduct our debates on public issues in a civil and respectful fashion. There is no doubt that a fragmented media and a general decline of standards has coarsened our public debate. There is plenty of blame to go around for this situation, end quote. Antonio Delgado, meanwhile, the Democrat from Rhinebeck, who unseated the Republican from Kinderhook, was more upbeat December 12th. Delgado said, and I quote, "I'm very excited to get to work and serve every constituent in our district by being accessible to them and transparent. We are committed to finding bipartisan solutions and prioritizing issues that people in upstate New York care about, like bringing broadband access to our rural communities, helping places like Hoosick Falls and Petersburg, which have been forced to endure a crisis of contaminated water, as well as working to make sure everyone has access to quality, affordable health care," end quote. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise today to give my thanks to the people of the 19th Congressional District for giving me the honor of serving them in the House over these past 2 years. I ran for Congress focused on how I could make a difference for the people of our district. It is no secret that upstate New York has been in a long, protracted period of economic decline, with many families and businesses choosing to leave due to high taxes and few employment opportunities. As such, my focus upon taking office was how we can make upstate more economically competitive, while at the same time making sure that our citizens, businesses, and local governments have an active voice representing their interests before the federal government. I listened to the people across the district, firefighters and emergency responders, law enforcement, educators, business owners, and average working families who told me of the issues that we face, the opioid crisis, the highest property taxes in the nation, the exodus of people and jobs from upstate New York. A primary focus of mine was the opioid crisis. This issue has devastated and destroyed countless lives across our nation. I was pleased to have become the primary sponsor of legislation in the House, and working with my colleague from Michigan, Mike Bishop, we successfully enacted major opioid legislation, which included the STOP Act. This legislation will crack down on the flow of illegal drugs such as fentanyl coming to the U.S. from places like China through the U.S. Postal Service. The STOP Act is now law, and I'm proud to have had a role in its passage. Agriculture is another major concern in the 19th District. Serving on the House Agriculture Committee, we have lowered the cost and increased the flexibility of dairy risk management programs, fought for better documentation to protect the sanctity of organic agriculture, and made it easier for veterans to transition into agriculture and supported increased broadband and cell service, which is critically important in our rural areas. I've also led on two initiatives which are critical to the economic health of upstate New York. My legislation, offered with other members of the New York delegation, would finally have ended our state's policy of imposing a share of Medicaid costs from Albany onto local property taxpayers. This mandate is so significant that just the county government taxpayers in New York State pay more in state-mandated Medicaid costs than local taxpayers in the 49 other states combined. People are fleeing upstate New York because of high property taxes, and New York's Medicaid mandate is one of the reasons for that exodus. The second initiative which I advanced was to preempt the absolute liability standard for gravity-related construction site accidents on federally funded project. Again, New York stands alone among the 50 states in this absolute liability standard. The fact that this standard doesn't protect workers and adds approximately 7% to the cost of every building project in our state. With multi-billion dollar projects like Gateway needing federal support, it is critical that we use the preemption power to finally end this waste of taxpayer dollars and use those savings to rebuild and repair more infrastructure. Finally, Mr. Speaker, I must comment on the state of our political discourse in the United States. We all need to renew our efforts to conduct our debates on public issues in a civil and respectful fashion. There is no doubt that the fragmented media and a general decline of standards has coarsened our public debate. There is plenty of blame to go around for this situation. I encourage all those who hold elective office to recognize that we have a sacred trust from the American people. We should uphold this responsibility in an honorable and dignified fashion and renew our efforts to improve the quality of public debate in the United States. In doing so, we will renew our commitment to make a more perfect union. Moreover, we will give honor to those who've sacrificed to win and maintain these freedoms which we cherish. The Constitution is forever our guide, and we should always remain true to it. We must also continue to promote individual liberty, the rule of law, and the dignity of all of our citizens. These are the characteristics of America that make ours a truly great nation. May God continue to bless the United States of America. Mr. Speaker, I yield back.
Thank you.
That was Happiness Can't Be Described by a Visible Color from Dustin Wong, Takako Minakawa, and Good Will Smith on the radio at WGXC. Next, we tune into Bill Colton, an assembly member who has an idea to save New York lots of money and to help the New York State environment.
So we're talking with Assemblymember Bill Colton, who is the lead sponsor of the Off Fossil Fuels Act in the New York State Legislature. Assemblymember Colton, what are you hoping to accomplish with this bill?
I think what we have to do is we have to draw attention and change the trajectory of climate energy as it's going at this point. Climate change is affecting us much more seriously than we ever thought it would. Even the advocates are now realizing that because of the fact that emissions have not been reduced, in fact, they might have been increased in many parts of the world, because of the fact that the changes from climate change are more drastic and more are accelerating much faster, we have a lot less time than we thought we had to change the direction of our course. And if we don't change it, there's going to be drastic changes to the way people are living, even more drastic than we thought. You're going to have water basically flooding lands that are being used with buildings and development. You're going to have, you know, air conditions that are much worse than we thought it would be. And we're going to face a real emergency, and we have not yet made the preparations to deal with such an emergency.
In recent months, we've had both the New York Times Magazine basically with the proposition that the planet is doomed because of a lack of a political will, and then more recently the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change saying we have 12 years left to act. Has that changed the sense of urgency at the, you know, at the state capitol about climate?
I don't know that it really has changed the sense of urgency. I think we have to make sure it does change the sense of urgency. I think we have to make people aware. And, you know, it's not going to come from the top down. It's going to have to come from the bottom up, which is a particularly challenging situation for us because we have to make people understand that this is going to affect the way they live their lives. This is going to affect their families. And so I think that's the challenge that we must face in the next year. And really, you know, it's not even in the next number of years because we're going to run out of time. The attitude towards climate change has to drastically improve. There must be a sense of urgency. And I don't think it's going to come from the top down. I think it's going to have to come from the bottom up.
Well, mentioning the bottom up, you know, in the last month or so, we've seen the Sunrise Movement at the national level with the Green New Deal supporting this call at the congressional level, you know, for a panel to do 100% by 2030. What's your feeling about, you know, what's going on in Congress and the Sunrise Movement?
I think that people are going to begin to become much more alarmed as we continue to have severe weather conditions, as we continue to get more statistics on the whether emissions are, you know, getting better or not, whether the flood conditions, the rising of the water is getting accelerating or not. And the only question is we have to make sure that they become sufficiently alarmed and alerted to it before it's too late to reverse. So again, I think we have a big job ahead of us in terms of organizing the grassroots and getting the word out how serious this issue is and how much of a priority we must make this issue in order to avert what truly is going to be a global crisis.
Well, you've introduced the Off Fossil Fuels Act in the New York State legislature. What are some of the things that this proposal would accomplish?
I think it's certainly one of the problems that we face is that there's continual movement to build more fossil-related facilities. And that defeats whatever the intentions would be of getting off fossil fuel. There's obviously a lot of financial support for fossil fuels because people make a lot of money out of it. So I think this bill is critical because it begins to change the mentality of fossil fuels, but more important, demands that elected officials start supporting projects that are off fossil fuel. You know, if we keep building more fossil fuel facilities and keep supporting them, we're never going to get off fossil fuel. So I think that's what the importance of that is. And I think that, you know, For example, the other bill, the 100% renewable by 2030, we got a large number of assembly sponsors for that bill. People took note about that. And now with the Times report out indicating, you know, the increased urgency, now with grassroots beginning to organize more and more, I think there's an opportunity for us to be able to get people on board and then with a grassroots movement influence the people to demand that those in the upper levels of government respond. I am really convinced that the grassroots part of it is essential. It's very difficult to get people in the top of government to see the problem. It's much easier to do that if there's a huge grassroots swell demanding action. And then those above will begin to realize that they can't ignore it any longer. They can't kick the ball down the field any longer. They got to act on it with concrete measures.
Obviously, the person who makes most of the decisions about what the state does on climate, is Governor Cuomo, who has, you know, received some applause for his efforts to ban fracking, not so much applause for his efforts to develop renewables. You know, how do people, you know, what would you like to see the governor do this year, and how can people help convince the governor?
I think I would like to see the governor make New York State the number one leader in terms of this whole area. I mean, California passed a significant bill that does move forward. I think that it could do much more. It doesn't accomplish everything that's needed. But I would like to see the governor now respond and show that New York should be the leader, not California, in terms of dealing with this climate change disaster that we face in the future, in terms of leadership, in terms of getting us off fossil fuels and getting us into 100% renewable energy. And I think New York has the potential of doing that. And I think the governor has shown that he has leadership when he identifies an issue that's important, and I think we need to convince him that this is an issue that's important, and he can bring New York as the number one leader in this whole area.
We have just about 2 minutes left. Are there any other environmental issues that you look forward to pushing this year?
Well, I think that there's a number of environmental issues that we have to keep pushing. You have constantly, materials that have toxins in them, that keep introducing toxins into our environment. So we have to continue to require manufacturers to stop using those materials when they're manufacturing things, especially with children. That's always a big issue that comes up. And, you know, we've made a lot of progress in that in New York. We have a lot more that we have to do. We also have a number of issues in terms of keeping our water clean. There's always threats to the water from the environment. And I think that we have to constantly, especially now that the federal standards are being threatened in terms of clean water and clean air, I think the state has to do even more strenuous measures to make sure our water and our air remains clean. And I think those are things that we can, we have a prospect of doing here in New York and make New York the leader in terms of those areas.
And I assume you probably have a website if people want more information about some of your legislation?
Yes, the official assembly website, which is on the official assembly site, assembly.gov. I have also my personal Facebook account where, I think that we can start posting more and more information on it. And I think, the community organizations, the local organizations, people need to participate in their rallies, in their meetings, 350 Brooklyn, there's many of them. We must make sure that, people start from the bottom up organizing and getting the word out to our government officials that they have to treat this as the crisis, which it is, and get the word out to everybody that that must happen soon, because delaying, we don't have the time to delay.
And this has been Assemblymember Bill Colton with Mark Dunley for WOOC.
And I'm Tom Rowe in Accra with the WGXC Morning Show. That was Assemblymember Bill Colton talking about his plan to get New York State off its addiction to fossil fuels. All kinds of death in the news today. The 7-year-old girl taken in at the border, migrant coming from Guatemala, wasn't given water and died a few hours later. We also have today as the 6-year anniversary of when 20 first graders were killed at Sandy Hook and 6 adults in that meaningless and horrible shooting. And then Nancy Wilson passed away yesterday. Here's her song, "The Masquerade is Over," with Cannonball Adderley.
Your eyes don't shine like they used to shine and the thrill is gone when your lips meet mine. I'm afraid the masquerade is over. And so is love. And so is love. Your words don't mean what they used to mean. They were once despised, now they're just routine. I'm afraid the masquerade is over. And so is love. And so is love. I guess I'll have to play Pagliacci and get myself a clown's disguise, and then I'll learn to laugh like Pagliacci with tears here in my eyes. You look the same. You're a lot the same. But my heart says no. No, you're not. You're not the same. I'm afraid the masquerade is over. All over. And so is love. So is love. It's all over. And so is
Nancy Wilson and Cannonball Adderley on the WGXC Morning Show. Next, C.J. Chapman and Peter Lavinia from the Green Party, New York State, discuss their legislative agenda in the New York State Senate and New York State Assembly starting in January.
So this week, the Green Party of New York State unveiled its legislative agenda for 2019 at the state level. C.J. Chapman and Peter Lavigne, state party co-chair, were two of the presenters. First, we talked to Peter. What were some of the key issues that was highlighted in terms of legislative priorities?
We have four main issues this session. The first one is serious action on climate change. We want a Green New Deal. Secondly, we'd like to see real single-payer health care, the New York Health Act, passed this session. Marijuana reform and legalization. We need to have criminal justice reform as well. And finally, we need electoral reform here in New York State, not just a full-time legislature, which we support, and ban on outside income, but also we need real ranked choice voting and proportional representation to make sure every vote counts and that we have more voices and choices in the New York State legislature.
CJ, you know, you mentioned in, during the press conference that you're, you know, a new mother, and as such, you're concerned about health care both for, you know, your child and for yourself. So what are some of your personal reasons why you're supportive of a single payer health care system?
Well, for me, I think that single payer health care is an access to health care in general is an issue that affects so many people from so many different demographics, and it's something that all working people can get behind and really band together to try to pass. And in my personal experience, I myself am on Medicaid, my child is on Medicaid, but that's a very tenuous situation. I said at the press conference, and it's totally true, every time I get a letter from DSS, I think to myself, is this the letter that's going to say I don't have health care anymore? And my partner gets healthcare through his work, but, you know, he can't even go to the doctor with the copays that they're so high. And if he had to be in the hospital, there's no way we could pay our rent and also pay the deductible at the same time. And that's a person who works, he's in a union job, he works 40 to 60 hour weeks depending on the week, and he should be able to go to the doctor and get preventative care and get emergency care. And I shouldn't have to worry that you know, my child isn't going to be able to receive care when he needs it. And in a country where insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies are profiting so much, and they are benefiting at the expense of regular working New Yorkers. And to me, healthcare is a human right, and I care about human rights. I got my start as an activist working on children's rights, and to me, that this is a children's rights issue and a family rights issue.
So why do you think single-payer health care would be an improvement? And, you know, how is that particular proposal, you know, looking in the state legislature at the moment?
I think single-payer health care would be an improvement because it would be fair. It would be universal. And we would get the insurance companies out of the picture. And as far as how that's looking in the legislature, the New York Health Act has passed in the Assembly for the past 4 years. It has had almost half of the state senators as co-sponsors. And now that both houses are controlled by the Democrats, theoretically that should mean that we should be able to pass it. That said, just because Democrats campaigned on supporting this doesn't mean that they're going to bring it to the floor or vote on it this session. And that's why we still really need to continue the work that we're doing to put pressure on them and hold them accountable.
So, Peter, you mentioned, you know, voting reform as one of the key issues for the Green Party. What are you hearing in terms of what the state legislature is considering? And, you know, do you have different proposals you would like to see advance?
What I've heard that the state legislature is considering, and granted this has just been out in the media, they haven't really talked about it concretely, but they're talking about extending days that you can vote, automatic voter registration. You know, I've heard, you know, potentially that we might see some form of public campaign financing. So there's a lot of stuff floating around out there that I think has been discussed as kind of baseline stuff that we need in New York State and across the country. But, you know, the Green Party is asking for the legislature to go further than that. You know, we'd like to see ranked choice voting. You know, Maine passed this.
I'm sorry, what is ranked choice voting?
So ranked choice voting, essentially you rank candidates based on your order of preference. And at a certain point, if the candidate that you choose doesn't receive enough votes, then your second choice votes start being counted. And what this means is that you get 50% of the vote for the winning candidate. So this just happened in Maine where a candidate – two candidates didn't receive a majority in the first round. They each received about 46 or 47% of the vote. But then the second choice votes put the one of the candidates over the top.
I believe a Democrat.
I do believe a Democrat. And so what we'd like to see is this ranked choice voting instituted across New York State. I believe a little over 10 years ago, Senator Krueger had a bill that would have allowed this to happen. Now that the Democrats are in control of the Senate, we think that, you know, this should be one of the things that they enact pretty quickly. They're always complaining about, the Democrats are always complaining about the spoiler effect. This completely eliminates the so-called spoiler effect. And it would also mean that there'd be more voices and choices. You know, people wouldn't have to worry about, oh, am I voting for this candidate or that? And what might happen, right? And that's what we often encounter as Greens, right? And we'd also like to see proportional representation. You know, this is a bigger push, but it's the idea that, hey, parties should be seated, candidates should be seated based on the percentage that their party gets across the state. This could help end gerrymandering, right? One of the ways that you can do proportional representation is to have one big district, and so you don't have to worry about how you cut the lines. And it also usually means in places that have proportional representation that more women, minorities, working class people are represented as well. And we think that there'd be more parties in the New York State legislature, like the Greens and Libertarians, Socialists, more voices and choices for New Yorkers. It seems like a no-brainer to us.
Now, one of the or two of the issues you talked about are related. One is the issue of marijuana legalization, which the governor now kind of says he, you know, supports. And then the related issue of criminal justice reform. You know, what are some of the key aspects of those issues that you're hoping the legislature will adopt?
It seems like the legislature is going to address marijuana legalization in 2019. We've seen a number of states around us do so already, or they're debating legalizing. And what we've seen is, you know, the Department of Health put out a report a couple of months ago saying that there would be tax benefits to this. You know, the Greens look at it like this. You know, we've been calling for marijuana legalization for decades, and we think that New York State needs to make sure that this is part of the 2019 agenda. We need to make sure that, that, you know, corporations don't dominate the marijuana market. People should be allowed to grow at home. We should make sure that there are non-GMO crops and that we're not having GMO seeds come in. And we need to make sure that there's criminal justice reform coupled with that marijuana legalization because this is at the core of the so-called war on drugs is mass incarceration, right? We need to make sure that nonviolent drug offenders are released, that their records are expunged, and that they are given opportunities to either participate in what would now be a legal marijuana industry or restitution for what's happened to them. And the money that is made from marijuana legalization should be directed towards rebuilding communities, especially poor communities of color that have been devastated by the drug war. I mean, this is something we think that absolutely needs to happen when we talk about marijuana legalization. This shouldn't just be about large corporations getting wealthy on now legal marijuana.
So we've been talking with C.C. Chapman and Peter Lavigne. If people want more information about the Green Party, you know, where do they get that? And maybe, C.J., if you have a last, you know, any input you want to put.
You can find us on social media and on the web, you know, www.gpny.org, Green Party of New York on Facebook. We're on Twitter as well. So you can find us at all of those places.
And any last comments from CJ?
My last comments would just be that I think the legislative agenda that the Green Party of New York has put forward is really strong. And I think that it's so important that we have an independent voice outside of the two major parties that's able to continually push for these sorts of reforms and these sorts of measures without being beholden to the interests that they're beholden to, because we really represent the people of the state's interests, and that's a voice that needs to be heard.
And this has been Mark Dunley for WOOC. Thank you.
Brand new music from Cass McCombs on the WGXC Morning Show.
This is Don Letts, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra. Stay tuned.
Tune in holiday specials this December on WGXC. At noon, Friday, December 14th, the annual Rockin' Ray Palmer Christmas Show is on live. Rockin' Ray Palmer returns to the WGXC Hudson studio, taking requests and playing Christmas favorites. At 7 p.m., Saturday, December 22nd, tune on for composer Phil Klein's Unsilent Night, performed live on the streets of Hudson. Find out more at WGXC.org or unsilentnight.com. At 5 p.m., December 24th, tune in for the Christmas Eve service live from the First Presbyterian Church in Hudson. All day Christmas Eve, December 24th, WGXC tunes in special NORAD reports at the top of the hour, tracking Santa's progress around the world.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, December the 14th, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. The Senate votes to withdraw funding for the Saudi war in Yemen. Also on the Friday rundown, the Global Climate Conference reinforces the need for grassroots movements. And could this be the most wasteful time of year? Topping our news, the Senate voted resoundingly Thursday to withdraw American military assistance for Saudi Arabia's war in Yemen. In doing so, the New York Times reports the Senate was issuing the latest in a series of bipartisan rebukes of President Trump for his defense over their role in the killing of a dissident journalist. The Times adds the 56-41 vote was a rare move by the Senate to limit presidential war powers. They add its immediate effect was largely symbolic after the House earlier this week moved to scuttle it, all but assuring the measure will expire without making it to Trump's desk. Stronger commitments to fight climate change are unlikely now to be the result of a climate conference in Poland. Eric Tegetthoff has talked with some of the Minnesotans who were there.
The 24th United Nations Climate Change Conference in Poland draws to a close today. Shefali Sharma, European Office Director with the Minneapolis-based Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy, was at the conference. She says the meeting isn't likely to yield stronger commitments from countries to reduce carbon emissions. That's despite the most recent UN report saying the world needs to keep temperatures from rising 1.5 degrees Celsius by 2030 in order to avert climate-related catastrophes. The United States was among a handful of countries that refused to endorse the report. But Sharma says the conference gave her hope about grassroots movements.
The actions are going to really have to come from the bottom up. They're going to have to come from municipalities, from cities, from states, from citizens really demanding that our governments do something. I don't see that it's going to come from this negotiating process.
Although the Trump administration pulled out of the Paris Agreement, a handful of governors, mayors, and officials from the U.S. were in Poland talking about the importance of combating climate change. Climate Mayors, a group that includes 11 mayors in Minnesota, has committed the cities it represents to meeting the Paris Agreement goals. Laurel Levin, an IATP intern and climate activist with the group Fossil Free, was also at the conference. She says while some actions took place, such as a protest at a U.S.-hosted meeting promoting fossil fuels, activism was mostly missing from the conference.
Poland was really cracking down on any kinds of resistance. Like, it wasn't even safe to wear a matching shirt as someone when you were walking around. And there was a whole blacklist of people who weren't allowed in to the country who were activists.
New research shows that while homelessness in the United States may be down overall, it's still rising in the most expensive rental markets, and New Hampshire has one of the lowest homeless rates.
Christopher Glynn, assistant professor at the University of New Hampshire, is one of the lead authors of the national Zillow-sponsored study. The researchers analyzed how people's share of spending on housing in each market correlates to homelessness. In New Hampshire, only about 7 in 10,000 families is homeless. Glynn explains why he thinks New Hampshire's rate is better than in other places.
One of the reasons that in most of the state, the homelessness rate is quite low is because New Hampshire has fairly affordable housing and lower rates of poverty.
However, the National Alliance to End Homelessness says about 1,450 individuals and families in New Hampshire are homeless, and more than 3,000 students. I'm Laura Rosbrow-Tellum reporting.
Farmers who want to grow hemp in New Mexico no longer have to worry that they're breaking federal laws. Here's Ross Brown.
The 2018 Farm Bill agreed on in Congress this week would legalize hemp production nationwide. Growing industrial hemp in New Mexico became legal this year after the state Supreme Court overturned a bill vetoed by Governor Susana Martinez on procedural grounds. But many farmers found it too risky with federal prohibition still in place. Jerry Fuentes has been a leader in getting hemp legalized in New Mexico for nearly 20 years and says farmers can finally look forward to growing it without being punished.
And we're looking at forming some cooperative now in New Mexico to grow hemp, 100-acre cooperatives and small farmers is what we're trying to organize. There's a whole lot of industry to be created now.
Hemp can be used for rope, clothing, biofuels, and the substance known as cannabidiol, or CBD, which is often sold as a health product.
With his work completed on hemp legislation, Fuentes says he'll be back at the opening session of the New Mexico legislature to advocate for legalizing marijuana, which he says could generate $60 to $70 million of new state tax revenue. And finally, Mary Sherman tells us the most wonderful time of the year is also the most wasteful.
According to the Environmental Protection Agency, Americans throw away 25% more trash between Thanksgiving and New Year's Day than any other time of the year. Whether you are shopping, decorating, cooking, or giving a gift, Hannah Greer Brown with the Solid Waste Authority of Central Ohio suggests looking for ways to reduce, reuse, and recycle. She adds you can encourage others to do the same.
As you are hosting family and friends, if you have a recycling container, I encourage you to set it out in a place that's really visible in your kitchen or your dining room so that you can capture those recyclable glass bottles, metal cans, jars, paper, and cardboard.
She notes cardboard boxes are easier to recycle if they are flattened. With holiday cards, Greer Brown recommends being selective about how many you send or send an electronic greeting instead. And unwanted holiday decorations and lights can be donated instead of tossed into the trash.
The EPA says about 28 billion pounds of food waste is thrown away each holiday season. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for wrapping up your week. News and Cruising with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Daniel Zuckerman is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The Coxsackie Village Board has approved a new water and sewer rate structure effective January 1st. Under the new rates, customers will be charged based on individual usage rather than a flat rate. Under the old plan, the village rate for using 10,000 gallons of water or less was $122.75 per quarter, and the sewer rate for 13,610 gallons or less was $75 per quarter, according to the village. Beginning with the new year, village customers will pay $8.14 per 1,000 gallons of water and $4.33 per 1,000 gallons of sewage. Mayor Mark Evans said the change from a flat rate to a pay-by-usage could save customers approximately $130 a year. He said, and I quote, "Going to per 1,000-gallon charge is the purest form of charge we can possibly get to. There's no minimum. There's no other hidden fees. We think that we've come up with a good system, a fair system," end quote. The town rates will pay slightly higher rates because it pays a share to maintain and repair the water and sewer lines. Evans said, and I quote, "If you're a town resident and you don't like that surcharge, you've got to talk to the town. We are simply mandated to put that on the bill," end quote. The new rates take effect January 1st, and the change will be reflected in users' April 1st bills. You can read that full story at HudsonValley360.com. Arn Cook is reporting for AMNewYork.com. State residents have 3 days left to sign up for health care benefits through the Affordable Care Act if they want guaranteed coverage on January 1, 2019. State open enrollment period closes January 31, 2019, but people must sign up by Saturday to ensure coverage in the new year. State health officials have increased their efforts to raise awareness of the deadline and get people enrolled, specifically in the wake of more federal funding cuts for marketing Affordable Care Act benefits. New York State of Health Executive Director Donna Frescator said more than 930,000 New Yorkers have already signed up for a health care plan through the marketplace this enrollment period. Frescator said, and I quote, "Current customers are re-enrolling at a rapid rate, and more than 51,000 new customers have already enrolled in the plan. The swift pace of enrollment shows that New Yorkers want the affordable health coverage they deserve," end quote. Qualified New Yorkers can enroll in a health care plan via the state online marketplace, newyorkstateofhealth.ny.gov, or call 1-855-355-5777. And you can read the full story at amny.com. MidHudsonNews.com is reporting an effort to ban plastic foam containers in Putnam County failed to pass the county legislature's health committee December 11th. The resolution failed to get the requisite number of votes to move it out of committee and on to the full legislature for a vote before the end of the year. Legislator Barbara Sakusimara championed the ban, charging, and I quote, "There was no meaningful recycling of polystyrene food containers. It takes 500 years for polystyrene to decompose. Polystyrene clogs our waters and damages wildlife," end quote. The use of polystyrene foam disposable food service containers have been banned from use by county governmental agencies such as the Office for Senior Resources, Sheriff's Office, and Putnam County Golf Course since 2015. Only large businesses or corporations would have been affected by the proposed ban. Legislator Carl, "No downside. It's only positive. It's a health issue and an environmental issue," end quote. Read the full story at MidHudsonNews.com. The Times Union is reporting voters in the Ichabod Crane School District narrowly approved a $27.1 million capital project December 12th. The resolution passed on a vote of 983 to 931. Superintendent of Schools Michael Vanio said, and I quote, "I would like to thank everyone who came out and supported improving key areas of our schools and enhancing our educational programs. I'm excited in planning for the construction, which we expect to complete over the next 3 years," end quote.
The funding approved will be used to modernize classroom space, strengthen educational and athletic and infrastructure concerns. Read more at IchabodCrane.com. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
The National and a low around 38. Saturday again, rain is in the forecast, 30% chance. Mostly cloudy skies and a high near 46. Saturday night, the rain could turn to snow, but it should be light. Mostly cloudy skies and a low around 29. Sunday, there's a chance of snow in the early morning, then turning to rain. Mostly cloudy skies, a high near 36 and a low around 29. I'm Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported, creative radio for open ears. Tune in Friday, December 14th to special radio on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. At 11 a.m., Frederick Arnold is in with the City Folk Show from Hudson's First Presbyterian Church. And then after the noon news, it's time at 12:05 today. Then stay tuned at 8 p.m. There's another holiday special with the Little Magician Annual Holiday Show at 8 p.m. We've also got an extra web stream from Hilo in Catskill with Lord Youth and Nick Pankin performing along Main Street in Catskill and on the radio at 90.7 FM.
On Silent Night Hudson 2018, in partnership with Wave Farm, Phil Klein's On Silent Night returns to Hudson for a third year. Led by Phil Klein himself, participants gather at WGXC's Hudson Studio, 169 Warren Street, inside the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson at Warren and 4th Streets, entrance on 4th Street. Participants bring a radio along to become part of the moving orchestra of sounds that engages Hudson's lesser-traveled alleys and enclaves. All are invited to participate. To do so, arrive to with external speakers. Go to unsilentnight.com/participate. An original composition by Phil Klein, written specifically to be heard outdoors in the month of four tracks of music. Together, all four tracks comprise On Silent Night. Visit
and you are listening to the WGXC Morning Show. We've got more new. Next year, Mercury Rev, the Hudson Valley Band, will release an album-length cover of Bobby Gentry's country rock opera, The Delta Suite. Here is just released a new track with Hope Sandoval on vocals. This is Big Boss Man.
Can you hear me when I call? Big boss man, can you hear me when I call? Oh, you ain't so big, you're just tall. Oh,
boss man, one gonna treat me right. Work big boss man, can you hear me when I call? Oh, you ain't so bad, you're just
degrees in Acre right now, 3 degrees Celsius with gloomy skies. Let's call them gloomy today. There's a slight chance of drizzle or light rain after 4 p.m. today with the drizzle and the high near 42, so it won't get too much warmer, but warmer than yesterday at least. But now we're looking at what's going on in the WGXC listening area this week. All sorts of things in the community calendar online at wgxc.org. Just click on the community calendar there, and you can find out all kinds of events up the mountain, down the valley, over the river, and through the woods. There's all kinds of stuff going on in the Upper Hudson Valley. And you can add your own event to the list. Just click on Add an Event right at the top of the page at the community calendar and copy and paste the information about the event that you're helping. Me will read it on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at wgxc.org in the community calendar. Like the Friends of Clybrook Free Library has an event this weekend, the 4th annual Handmade Jewelry and Gifts event. There'll be handmade books by local artist Lucy Swoop and more this weekend at the Clybrook Free Library. Clybrook Free Library also has its December book group today, 5:30 p.m. And the book this month is A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. The Oberufer's Shepherd's Play is tonight at the First Presbyterian Church in Hudson. The tradition had it that a group of ordinary citizens in the small Austrian village of Oberufer would come together each year at Christmas time to perform this play for the town. Three bumbling shepherds who are visited by the angel Gabriel and who make their way to Bethlehem in search of the newborn child. Camp Hill Hudson community is putting on the play tonight, 7 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church in Hudson on Warren Street at 4th Street. Right. The Reverend Ronald Grant also has an evening of sacred seasonal jazz tonight at 8 p.m. Clubhouse. You can make a night of your seasonal celebrations. Almost across the street from each other. Club Helsinki is near 4th and Columbia Street. 405 Columbia Street, to be exact. At High Low in Catskill tonight, Lord Youth and Nick Pankin perform. Pankin is from the band New York band Spirit Family Reunion. They're performing around 8:30 p.m. tonight at High Low. There should be a live web stream to listen at home if you can't turn out to High Low in Catskill on Main Street. You can learn to watercolor with your grandperson Saturday, December 15th at the Hudson Area Library. That's from 1 to 4 p.m. Or you can hear about real people and real stories at the Ankrum Opera House. This month's theme of their storytelling series is The Kindness of Strangers. That's from 3 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. at the Ankrum Opera House Saturday, December 15th. There's a Kwanzaa celebration at the Hudson Opera House Saturday, December 15th at 3:30 p.m. And the Camp Hill folks are also putting on that play, The Oberfurs Shepherd's Play. Again, Saturday, December 15th at 4 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church in Hudson. Speed Sisters is the movie screening at the Old Chatham Quaker Meeting House Saturday, December 15th at 6 p.m. Actually, the pop